I have to put a wool blanket in my door, and that means that there are parts of the wool blanket on the other side of the door that one of these ferocious cats really likes to play with.
Well, I have a cannon outside, so that may interrupt my recording as well. We both have things to deal with today.
Is that cannon always there, or is that...
No, that there's just a guy with a Ford truck and a trailer, and he just brings his cannon here and parks it in the field for a couple days.
Hello, and welcome to Codex. It's a casual lore podcast where two friends, myself, Phil, and my co-host, Logan, talk about weird video game lore things that we like.
And other random nonsense.
Yeah, and Civil War cannons in our backyard. Today's episode is about the Animus from the Assassin's Creed series. But before we get into that... I'm trying to remember to put in the bright spots. So, though there is some amount of Civil War cannon fire behind you, do you have a bright spot that you'd like to share with the class?
I do. It will be a bunch of the people I follow on YouTube just dropped a video very recently, like last week.
Okay.
We got a Jenny Nicholson video, not that long ago. We got a video from Paper Will, who I don't know if you and I have talked about before.
No, we haven't.
Another long form content creator. They spent about a year or so putting this one together. It's a 5.5 hour long video on entertainment produced by North Korea.
Yeah,
and their previous episode was on entertainment produced by cults. Somewhat related to our cast, they have a really good one around video games and 9/11.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah. Good stuff. Darker than I would like maybe just recommend for most people blindly.
I mean, those three topics are real feel good stories, I suspect.
Yeah. But yeah. None of it sneaks up on you for the most part. Like it's,
yeah, that's fair.
He's pretty explicit about it. And then the other one that just dropped was PhilosophyTube, which I'm not for sure if you're familiar with them either. Abigail Thorne just released a video on Judith Butler and gender trouble, which I have threatened you with a few times now.
Yeah, you have. Okay.
So we got scooped pretty hard there, which is ideal because that text is beyond me.
Yeah, someone more equipped and more knowledgeable has tackled it,
so we can just send
people there.
Exactly. Just watch PhilosophyTube's video, and eventually we'll talk about that at some point, and I'll do a worse job of explaining it.
Yeah, we'll say this is what we took away from it and how we think about it, but also for someone who actually knows what they're talking about, go here.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, that's just awesome. A plethora of like 10 hours or so of content from people who put out videos somewhat regularly all
nice.
Over the last week.
Sweet. Yeah, mine, I mean, we just spent probably 40 minutes of the pre-show discussing it, but mine is I have finally received the loaner or previous laptop that you've been playing with. Mm-hmm. I've now joined the Republic of Gamers. And I'm excited to jump into Helldivers 2 as my maiden journey on this beast.
Man, we're going to see how long that thing lasts. Part of me thinks it's going to burn out in a week, but also part of me thinks it'll outlive both of us.
I mean, if it goes down in the pursuit of super democracy, then I think that it's all right.
Yeah.
Casualty to super democracy.
Aren't we all?
Yes. All right.
Anyway,
yeah. With that out of the way,
bright spots.
Let's talk about the Animus. Are you familiar with Assassin's Creed? Like, did you like the rest of the world play Assassin's Creed 2 and then stop playing forever?
No. Yes and no. So I think I saw you finish one. I think I was at your house when you beat that.
That sounds right. Did I kill the Pope?
You did.
Yep. Okay.
You either had just Assassin's beat Creed it and reloaded the same to show it to me again. Or no, the first one. The very first one I watched you play the end of, I think.
Ooh,
and also the
okay.
Pope. And also the fist fighting Pope. No, I played through Brotherhood, which had a really cool online mode, I remember. And then okay. I did a good chunk of Black Flag.
Oh, yes.
And then... whatever the Revolutionary War one was. Is that four?
Three.
Three. Okay. Yep. I did most or all of that. That was maybe it?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
That's it. So also, they made a movie.
God, I haven't
seen
it. Which
I did not watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you basically played, I'm trying to remember, I think Black Flag is maybe the end of the Desmond story? Maybe that's Syndicate?
Black Flag is like a standalone thing in my memory. That was the one where they're like, hey, you're actually Abstergo? Is that the thing?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's the video game one, right?
Yeah, that's the, like, you're an Abstergo game tester now because... I don't know. We've gone too far up our own ass and pirates are cool. Shut up. Here's this rad game.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about Abstergo games in a bit, actually. Okay, cool. Yeah. So I've played, I think all of them, all of the like mainline ones. Like I didn't play the Liberation, which I think was a PSP game, or the Chronicles ones, which were side scrollers. Mm-hmm. But I've played all of them except Revelations, which I think was the like standalone Ezio game.
Yeah.
But so I am weirdly fascinated with the Assassin's Creed games, and mostly because I'm very curious why they continue to make them the way that they do, where they are real world. Like current day storylines mixed in with historic, like theme park rides, kind of. And I don't know. I just love me a checklist game is probably the real crux of it all. But the
you met my friend Ubisoft.
Yes, yeah, they're real good at that. They actually just announced Assassin's Creed Shadows, I think, which is guess what? They're finally going to Japan.
Is it going to be bad? Are they bad? Are they bad games now?
Are they bad games? Good question. I think that they are big games. I think they're probably slightly bloated games. I think that my overriding feeling about Assassin's Creed in general is I wish that they would just do the... like what Creative Assembly does with Total War, where they're just like, here's a Total War game around this general historic period. Like the artifice of it has to connect to precursor races and everything. Just, they never do enough with it to make it worth it. So it just feels like, I don't know, like here's your Viking adventure, have some fun. Here's your ninja adventure, have some fun. But it has to be a franchise, so they tie it in. I don't think they're necessarily bad games. I just wish that, you know, that they would kind of put up or shut up when it comes to the real world stuff.
That always felt like, I don't know, to me that felt like some suit decided that history was for dorks and they weren't going to be able to market broadly on strictly a historical setting.
Maybe. But I mean, you look at something like Ghost of Tsushima and you're like, well, maybe you actually could, but that's,
yeah,
I guess,
that's also
even a little
15
more
years later.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the first Assassin's Creed, well, I guess the first one didn't have as nearly as much, did it? Did it have any of the Abstergo animus?
Yes. Yeah, you start that game as Desmond, and you walk into the animus. Like you lay down on the animus, and you'll come out of it every once in a while, I think.
Because I remember there being like full action scenes in 2 and 3 that I played through, or 3 and something, where you're like, you're running around with stun batons and doing Assassin's Creed-ing about.
Yeah, I don't remember which one that was, but yes, you do ultimately Assassin's Creed about as Desmond in the modern day. Actually, we can kind of just get into that. That might be a good way to actually start talking about what the Animus is and why Desmond is Assassin's Creed-ing about in the real world. From what you remember, and I think it's probably going to be based on like 1 and 2 and then into 4, but generally the Animus, it's a virtual reality computer machine thing. In the first couple games, you lay down on it as a bed of some sort. And then in 4, when Abstergo becomes a weird Ubisoft Montreal stand-in, it turns into a VR headset and game console. The purpose of the device is, and this is where we get kind of weird, it is to read a subject's genetic memory and put that output onto a screen of some sort. And then it's, especially in the video game console, that information goes into a data collection tool, and then that can be sent out as like video games for other people to experience. And you might be asking, what's a genetic memory?
I mean, most people would be asking that, but I have unfortunately encountered too much Alex Jones for me to not know what that is.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
But go ahead. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's basically this very pseudoscience idea that somehow in your DNA, like your DNA contains the memories of your ancestors passed down through generations, which is their like weird connection is like, well, that's why animals have instinctive abilities. You know, why would a squirrel ever jump through the trees unless they, you know, had some genetic reason to remember that they can do that.
Yeah. And that's why dead languages are notoriously easy to decipher and translate.
Exactly. We all remember what they are instinctively.
Instinctively.
Yeah. So that is what it does. So somehow this machine connects up to your DNA in some way, and then it projects that only for you. Like it only is able to read your personal genetic memories, and then you enter a VR world and are able to relive those memories. And the purpose of that is Abstergo is backed by the Templars, which are against the Assassins, and we don't have time to get into all of that, but basically they want to find these things called the Pieces of Eden, which, again, we don't have time to get into that, from a precursor race, which I swear to God we will talk about at some point, but they're objects of power, and they want to get them so that they can conquer the world, do evil people shit. And in order to do that, they have to get the people who have genetic memories of interacting with those objects in theme park versions of the coolest parts of history that you remember.
I love this as a self-contained like video game mechanic to explain it feels like they clearly started with like, okay, we want to do all these cool historical settings, but we also want some overarching narrative to make it consumable for people as a long-term product. And I think this is a really kind of a cool video gamey creative solution. It unfortunately just has so many real world parallels to terrible ideas that make it a little tough to fully embrace.
Yeah. So
maybe we just dodge that now by saying like these concepts can lead to some dark decisions. But also it's fun. So we're just going to talk about it as a video game thing right now.
Yeah. So speaking of dark decisions and video game things, if you were to pinpoint a specific part in 20th century history where a machine that would read genetic memories in order to find objects of power was developed, could you pick maybe like a single decade where you think that might be a thing
where someone tried to do that?
Yeah. Perhaps a group of people tried to do that, to find a very powerful object that could help them conquer the world.
I mean, which parallels do you want to draw? Pick a superpower between 1936 and now.
Uh-huh.
And so, and we can make a whole bulletin board of examples.
Hear me if you've heard this one before. During a top secret SS Nazi project, the Animus was developed.
See, yeah, it's nice how like it also just parallels with the bomb pretty to some degree as well.
Yeah, I'm pulling from some secondary non-game sources here. I mean, the Assassin's Creed stuff. I remember reading an Assassin's Creed Brotherhood book on a beach once.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there is a huge, huge, huge amount of stuff that goes beyond the games. Like, I think this is mostly coming from a comic book. But, it was developed by another secret group of SS folks as a part of the Nazi atomic program.
So their backstory is the Nazis were right about race memory?
We're not going to get into that.
Yeah.
It's their
movie. You didn't have to do that. You could have.
Yeah, you could have picked anything.
You made up the rest of it.
Yep.
You could have made up a different thing other than you got, like, you don't have to give it to the Nazis, I guess is my point. You don't have to, especially in fiction.
I think that it's just the weird thing of the whole Templar and assassin thing is just, you have to make it the assassins are the good guys. And then the Templars are the most evil people you've ever met always. So it just like turns into, well, obviously it was developed by the Templars who are also Nazis. Surprise. And it just kind of follows that logic forever.
These feel very much to me like the nonsense that you and I would spit back and forth to each other at like 3 a.m. on a Thursday at the age of 19.
Yeah.
We're like, someone just needs to walk in the room and be like, hey, did you fucking think about this at all?
And the answer was no.
I clearly did not. I was just kind of rolling with the cool parts, but I did not have the perspective to come to the conclusion that I was endorsing these weird beliefs.
Yeah. So here's the real thing. And I think is maybe the weird part about a lot of this assassins versus Templar stuff that has happened. Like, I think the first thing is that they tried to do pirates versus ninjas for the most part. And just like when it was, you know, 2010, 2 years after that was the thing, it just kind of has lost its, like, it's not fun anymore. I think a lot of this is coming from someone read a Dan Brown book once, and they're like, holy shit, Templars are, like, we could make a cool thing out of this secret society that's Freemasons and Templars and all of that. And now that we're 15, almost 20 years away from when that was a cool thing that we all discovered, it just kind of is not as profound or as interesting feeling, so you just have to keep doubling down on it to make it be something, you know. We're now stepping into Indiana Jones territory. Like, how far are we until we have a World War II Assassin's Creed?
I mean, yeah. I think that, like, I very much remember that we'll just call it the Dan Brown moment in history, sort of, like, all of the secret society stuff that popped up on History Channel and documentaries and all of the movies and everything. But I feel like, yeah, to your point, that was really fun up until a bunch of people were like, actually, QAnon's real.
Yeah.
And now that's less fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's all been really twisted and broken. So, yeah, it was developed. We haven't even got to the fun part yet. It was developed during the Nazi atomic project. But guess who developed it? Because this is my second favorite thing about Assassin's Creed stuff. Is that they just feel it's really important that they have their fun historical figures pop up.
Oh, yeah. I am of both minds of those. Those are fun and I hate them.
Yeah. So the Animus was developed by the only inventor that you could possibly think of to invent a really cool piece of technology in the 40s. And it is a person.
Tesla.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It was created by Nikola Tesla.
Shocking, I tell you. Shocking for consistency.
You see, Nikola Tesla, he faked his own death, and then he ended up joining the Assassins, but then he was a double agent for the Nazis to build the technology so that he could ruin it for everyone.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah.
These are fun stories.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was made in 1943, and then it basically was used the same way that it was used in like 2007, when the devices continued to be used, where it's just like, we need to search these memories to find these very powerful items, and the goals really haven't changed, and it just continues going. The technology obviously got more sophisticated, and to the point where in 1, 2, and 3, it was still this kind of lay down bed device that was like a very prototype device, to 4, where it becomes a video game console with like a VR headset and everything. And the whole point of that one is that you were able to, because of their secret programs in the past, they're able to gather all of these memories so that once they hit the main market with their VR device, everyone is able to play through these memories as games. And the purpose of that is, you know, it's a numbers problem, right? Like you get more and more people to play through the memories so that you're more likely to find the object that you need, to like, you know, world domination. And then
they're like, oh, okay, we did Nazis. Now we're going to move on to big data.
We got to keep
rolling through. Yeah.
Yeah. To the point where it was kind of like a weird cell phone that they just decided to make the evil corporation be the actual developers of the video game. But it's probably not worth digging into that too much.
Yeah. That very much felt like, I mean, that was a studio versus publisher dig, right?
Oh, maybe.
That's, I guess, how I read that. It's just like, oh, you can't make us not do this. So
it was fun anyways. I appreciate the look at us being cheeky.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the development of the Animus and the creation of it. I think maybe the more interesting stuff for us to talk about, though, are some of the like concepts in the game. So there's two kind of important concepts that come to Desmond just assassin creating around in the modern day real world. So the first one is this concept of synchronization. So as you play through Assassin's Creed games, there's like a certain amount of things that you can do. So is this notion that as the player or the person experiencing the memories is interacting with those memories, they have to adhere somewhat to what the ancestor exactly did. So, and we'll get into the real nitty gritty of this in a little bit, but the idea is that like, as you're walking around as Altair, you can't just murk a bunch of civilians because that's not what happened. And therefore you break synchronization with the simulation as it's happening. So it kind of spits you out. So there's barriers that are set up to make sure that you interact with the way that the ancestor had, in case something really bad happens. That's also what happens when you die. So like the ancestor did not die when they fell off the cliff because they pushed the wrong button. So that kind of reloads you back as a like a desync, and it takes you back to where you were before.
I think that's a pretty elegant solution to an annoying problem in games. Because like bumping up against an invisible wall as a boundary got old, even in like the N64 era. So having kind of an in-game thing that reinforces both those like physical and like game mechanic boundaries is neat.
Yeah, and it started as the shimmering outer walls and stuff of like the actual game bounds. Like this character would not like you are.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
It's got like some real next gen holodeck vibes.
Yeah, like tessellated triangles and all of that stuff. Yeah, that it's kind of cool. I like it as a fun game mechanic. I think we'll talk about synchronization in a little bit in further detail, because I think there's some fun discussions for us to have about that. The other thing is the bleeding effect, which is why Desmond is able to run around and merc fools, is that it's this concept of the longer that you stay in the Animus, it causes mental instability or different changes with the person who's using it. So it's known as the bleeding effect because the experiences that you're having by reliving your genetic memories is now imbuing you with some of those same powers. So like, that's why when you are in the, you know, quote unquote real world as Desmond in the later games, he's actually moving around and controlling exactly like Altair or Ezio were, because he's literally turning into an active assassin as the game progresses, as he continues to experience more and more memories.
Do we get into the, like, how do we know we're not just living one of Desmond's memories right now?
No, I don't think so.
We do simulation theory with the Animus, I guess, is my question. Do they get to the question. Like, why would we not just, I don't know, couldn't, I mean, not to get like too great. What if you just have Desmond? Yeah, none of this makes sense. I'm going to not interrogate the mechanics too deeply. Continue.
Yeah. 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 I don't know if they've ever really explored the whole, how many simulations down are we? I think it's always been like, we assume that the world is the real world, and then we're just experiencing a simulation based off of that.
And do, like, okay, so in my mind, the only memories that would carry forward were those which happened before you had a child, right? Like, how could I impart genetic memory to as an 86-year-old or something? Did they deal with that ever?
I'm guessing so. I don't.
Or is there like a requirement as a member of the Assassins to like father a child in as late of years as possible?
No, because like the technology.
Oh yeah,
because
they wouldn't know this.
New.
Yeah, that's only going backwards. Yeah, so like
there is some kind of weirdness. I'm trying to remember if there are any kids in. I don't remember any children being born. Like, maybe in Origins there is. But so the ways that they've kind of had fun playing with this in the past is something like in Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which is the like Victorian London one, you play as two characters. You play as, I think it's, maybe Edward and Evie Fry. I don't know if his name's Edward. Either way, you play as both of them. You can kind of move back and forth between them, and it is because they are twins. So you have like access to both genetic memories somehow. I don't know how that works, because I guess if you start making a family tree, it just really falls apart.
Yep.
Huh.
Yep.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I broke your toy.
Yep. I mean, there's also in Odyssey, I don't remember what the relationship between the kids are. Those might be, that also might be twins.
I played a lot of that one. I forgot about Odyssey.
Yeah, Odyssey's good stuff. So the spoilers, the big spoilers for Fate of Atlantis, the last DLC for that game. You should play it. But the whole thing with that one is that the character discovers this thing called I don't remember what it's called. It's like the Staff of Hermes or something. It is it's a object of power, and basically if you hold on to it, it like grants eternal life. So your character, whichever one you play as, at the end of that DLC, you basically take it from Pythagoras, of course. And you hold on to it, and that character persists for at least into the Middle Ages, where you run into them again in the most recent one, Valhalla. So that character lives for over 1,000 years. So, I mean, maybe a different question. I don't know how the character you play as, the real world character you play as in Origin, Odyssey, and Valhalla is able to experience all of those, but it might be part of the, you just experience other people's memories now.
Yeah, it's, it seems like something that maybe was not designed to be looked at that closely, nor should it.
Yeah, or they just, like, when they decided to get rid of Desmond, they're like, okay, well, this is done. We're done with tying ourselves to one person's genetic line because this gets a little too weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing that I wanted to touch on, and then we can really get into the weird part of this, is I kind of jump scared you with this a little while ago, but this is the first recurring character in the podcast, and it is friend Carl Jung. I really didn't think that we would be returning to weird 1900s philosophy and psychology stuff, but here we are, I guess.
This is turning into your thing.
This was not the intent, but yes.
No, this is your thing.
Weirdly, it is. I've really come a long way. I've now decided that it is indeed Jungian. So, you know, we're gaining confidence.
Moving forward.
Yeah. So the animus and the anima are the unconscious. So the animus is the unconscious masculine side of a woman, and the anima is the unconscious feminine side of a man, which transcends the personal psyche. I don't really know what that means, but it basically is this concept of the unconscious mind is always like fighting itself. So you can never, like, the really dangerous thing here is that if your animus invades the conscious mind, it like generates basically the bleeding effect that we're talking about, where the unconscious archetypes of this other, you know, 19th century gendered version of your brain is now starting to take over and bleed through, and then it, you know, contributes to mental instability.
I feel like I have thoughts that won't be useful, so we'll just continue with that. That's right.
It kind of falls into the same, like a lot of the same stuff, where it's just like weird bunk ideology from the early 1900s that's like clearly gendered in a very bad way, in a way that we don't understand gender to be anymore. And it also just kind of, like, I think some of them are, you know, they're based on the Greek pantheon, I think. Like, one of the animus archetypes is Hera, the mother. And it's just, you know, all of this stuff is starting to work onto your mind, and is potentially, if one of them takes over, it can have bad effects. But yeah. I mostly bring that up.
On esotericism.
Yes. Yeah.
As long as it stays in its little bubble, then... Yeah.
Yeah. So that's
a cool way to tie stuff together.
Yeah. And I mostly bring it up because there's a couple of somewhat weird existential questions about, you know, I guess we've already dove into a couple of them now, but I think one of the big ones about how the animus works and how it works as like a game versus a real world concept is as the lore of all of this stuff has started to expand, as more and more characters in their real world are interacting with these memories, and that they're going into bigger and bigger worlds. Like, it, you know, think about something like Odyssey or Valhalla, where there's these very large, wide, expansive worlds that you can explore at your own pace. You know, they have level guides, but you can explore as you go. And the thing that I think gets really convoluted and weird is the UI of the game, like the quest log, the mini map, the loading screens, subtitles, even the encyclopedia codex, all of that stuff is in the animus. Like, that is not an abstraction layer that is put on top for gameplay reasons. It is actually in the device that the person in the game is experiencing in this new simulation. And then you layer that into the concept of synchronization, where there are things that this person did in real life and that you have to hew to it as close as possible, otherwise you desync in this incredibly wide world, and you start to get to this weird question of, am I reliving someone's memories, or am I playing a simulation of someone's life? And how does, like, what where is the divide there?
Okay. I mean, I'm going to be a bit of a dick and say it is an abstraction for the game, but that game is within the context of another game. Like, the UI that the Animus is layering on is for the player within the confines of the world of Assassin's Creed who is playing a game. Does that, okay. Does that track or no?
Kind of. I think the thing that I've been thinking a bit more on is I don't know if they're playing a game. Like, we the player, if we're like, I feel like I need a diagram, but let's just try this as best as possible in audio. So I am playing.
I'm sure we'll nail it.
Yeah. I am playing an Assassin's Creed video game.
Who is I?
Me, the player. I am playing an Assassin's Creed
Phil
video game. Yes.
Are playing Assassin's Creed.
Yes.
Sitting in your house.
Yep. I'm in my house. Okay. I'm playing a game on my Xbox.
Yes.
So in the lore of the game, what is happening is that I, the player, am controlling the experiences of, let's pick Assassin's Creed 2. I am controlling the experiences of Desmond Miles, a character in 2007, who is now laying down in the Animus, and they are reliving the genetic memories of Ezio in Renaissance Italy. But he's reliving the memories, and I'm simply playing the control of Desmond. Does that track?
Yes. I guess my point is the UI for Phil or is the UI for Desmond?
Well, so that's the...
If the UI is for Desmond, then it is for a game. In by Abstergo's telling of it, at least.
Yeah. It's just the weird layer of... Like, I guess maybe the big difference here is, are those supplemental materials to a movie that Desmond is watching? Or is Desmond actually controlling the character, which then kind of pushes up against the notion of synchronization, right?
So is it like a pop-up video sort of mechanic?
Yeah.
Let me add another thing in here, which if we assume somewhat of the Abstergo line that they can, like, do this with seemingly anybody, if we look at something like Odyssey, which I did play like 100 hours of, I don't remember. But you, like you said, you have this whole free roam city, and that feels like kind of antithetical to the concepts that they put forth early on of like living through this one person's thing and this relatively narrow focused series of events. But what if we take a big data approach to this and we say they can... collate all of those people's memories and recreate that place based on that information. If we take the memory of everyone who lives in London at a given time, we can recreate London, like, without relying explicitly on any one memory. That environment could be replicated. Even though it's not like a one for one, it's a representation of all of those memories in aggregate, which sounds more like Jungian bullshit. So it probably works for your thing.
Yeah, that is that the collective unconscious? I think.
Yeah, that's what I was going towards.
Yeah, I think that probably makes sense. That also probably
it shouldn't.
Well, no, but within the logic, I feel like that probably makes sense a little bit more, because I think once you get into the idea of genetic memory and like is and we're quite far afield now, but is the notion that genetic memory is like capital T truth, or is that also perceptive truth, right? Like it seems odd to think of it as somehow in your DNA is the capital T truth as it exists versus the like experienced truth. And then why are there not weird, you know, what, maybe that's why you can't go in some of the buildings in Victorian London, is because this character never went into that building. But it seems like there would, you know, I barely remember what the storefronts in my town look like, and I've lived there for 3 years, you know, like it, where's the divide there?
Yeah. And I mean, capital T versus lower key truth is going to have to be a different series of episodes.
Yes.
Because now you're getting closer into my realm of bullshit.
I am attempting to bait you with some of these and see where
I know
your
you
lines
are. It is a deep dark hole to fall down. So maybe we'll do a whole thing on that.
Yeah.
We're gonna get into some weird territory there. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, are we doing a? Is this all controlled by Abstergo, as far as we know, in the future? Like, is there a competing product?
I don't think so. There is, I think, the real world character that you play as in the like open world trilogy is a former Abstergo employee who has like a travel lay down animus. But I don't think that, like, there's not, like, another Abstergo Entertainment other one. I don't think so.
Because this seems like a good way to do a 1984 also. Like, you could get away with some pretty pernicious history rewriting through this mechanism. If there's no, like, comparison point. I can't verify a genetic memory, so, like...
Sure, but I mean,
for being just straight, it could be anything.
Yeah, and even if you think about it a little bit, like that is kind of what Assassin's Creed the game has done somewhat. Like this idea of, you know, back to the idea of historical figures all hanging out at the same time, like this weird leveling of thousands of years of history to fit this one particular. Like theme park, as I've described it, like the idea that I don't have a very good example right now, but
Forrest Gumpification of history.
Yeah, kind of like the odds of, you know, Alexander Graham Bell and also Tesla and also, you know, other 19th century inventors just hanging out together in London, all being connected to some secret organization when, you know, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but I mean, the great man of history theory is that can be a whole, that could be multiple episodes also. But like we're kind of, at least in the U.S., raised pretty hard on that. So it makes sense as like a comfortable place to lean, and it also means they don't have to like come up with a bunch of nonsense. They can just grab a name that will have some recognition and continue with their story.
Yeah. Yeah, it is just very funny to think about Leonardo da Vinci being a funny dude who also likes to upgrade your wrist blades.
Yeah. There's only been, what, like 9 people who have done science ever in all of human history.
That's just a verifiable fact.
Yeah.
I think, but that's the animus. I think the last question I want to throw your way is, if you could go through your genetic memory, when would you like to go experience history as your animus self, or would you?
Ooh. I think I have a brain that would like really excel at gathering berries and living in caves. So
ooh, real far back. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just real ancestral Eve stuff all the way back.
Yeah.
Okay. I was.
So you have to answer that now. You don't get to.
Yeah, I know. I realized after the fact, I never actually gave you an answer to the vault question either. And I was just seeing how long I can go positing things to you and then avoiding them. So a weird 2020 pandemic project of mine was getting real deep into Ancestry for like a good 3 months. Back then, I was able to find marriage records all the way back to like 1630s, like provincial France. And there's a part of me that would just like to be a farmer in the south of France, just chilling. Because the best part is that, just like in movies where you never see characters go to the bathroom, no one ever really gets sick or has a bad time in the Animus. So there's just something real nice about hanging out in the south of France during the summer, getting my grain and my wheat and making bread.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So if the premise of the question is what period of history do you want to go hang out in and not deal with all of the bullshit that comes with that, then my answer might still be the same. Actually, I'm not sure.
Yeah. it's either that or like pre 9/11, 2001, like that perfect sweet spot of youth. And if I don't have to deal with the bullshit, I can just load up my computer and, you know, you could be playing RuneScape forever today.
I would say we're going to have to talk about old school RuneScape. That is why
it wasn't even old school then.
That is the pursuit of that feeling is the reason old school RuneScape exists.
Yeah,
the pursuit of the feeling of a snow day in middle school is
a perfect feeling.
Yep.
So perfect. I will have to brush up on my middle French, I think, but you'll just be fine. You'll just be reliving.
Yeah, exactly.
Youth. Awesome. I think that is an episode on the Animus. Do you have any other questions about the Animus or perhaps existential threats about it that you think it's worth untying?
I mean, I have many questions about the Animus, but I don't think those questions have answers.
Perfect. I you know what? I would not be surprised if there are answers hiding in comic books, but I definitely don't have those answers for you.
I guess that gives us a potential follow-up later then.
Yeah, I'll have to go get a bunch of comic books, and we'll talk about the Michael Fassbender armature Animus that is not included in this list that we talked about.
The one that swings you around like a Muppet?
Yeah.
That's 100% of my knowledge of that movie. So,
yeah, that's about all I know too.
Cool.
So I think that is an episode. Thank you so much for listening to this diversionary discussion on the Animus and Assassin's Creed at large. If you like the show, tell a friend, rate and review on your podcast player. GordonHamburger.com is where you can go to read some reviews. I think I have one on Harold Halibut coming up pretty soon. You can also find links to Threads accounts, Twitch, which isn't being super used right now, but there is YouTube videos now, so you can find that if you want to see us do an hour-long walkthrough of the opening of Prey, one of my favorite immersive sims. If you want to send a message, recommend piece of world building for us to look into, there's a contact page, all of that stuff. I have been Phil. You can follow me on Threads at Phil Bothan.
And this has been Logan. You can follow me nowhere on purpose.
All right. Thank you for listening, and see you next week where we will talk about another weird thing and probably ramble too long about it.
As is our wont. Hey, did you get the cannon? Did you get the cannon?
Oh, no, I didn't get the cannon.
Okay, there were two cannon shots.